You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends,
a Q1 Network production.
If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend David Hansen for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I'm just delighted to have as my guest an incredibly accomplished individual. She's the CEO and president of High Road Partners, former North Dakota Labor and Commerce Commissioner. I need to say it that way because for about 6 or 7 months, she was wearing both of those hats. She's held key executive positions in other high-profile companies. She's a wife, mother of 3 daughters, has dogs, a cat, and by golly, she's my good friend, Michelle Comer. Michelle, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. Thank you for taking time to join me. It's great to see you. How are you?
I'm super, Mike, and thank you for inviting me. I'm so happy to see you and hear you today. I'm just really excited to be with you.
Well, thank you. And I know you're awfully busy, and we'll talk about your firm here in a little bit. You know, for the sake of full transparency for listeners and followers of Mike Seminary and Friends, I'm on the board of the North Dakota Economic Development Foundation, have been for, I think, 6, 7 years now. And I was privileged to be on that foundation board when Michelle was the commerce director. So that's really how we got to know each other and had, I think, just some of the most incredible discussions about economic development regionally, statewide, and how that impacts all of us. You were appointed by Governor Doug Burgum, but you know, before that, you had a really full career. Kind of give the folks, you know, a thumbnail sketch of your background, and then we'll get into some questions.
Sure thing, Mike. Well, brevity is not a strength of mine, but the high-level summary of what I've been doing for the last 25-plus years is business process improvement. And I've been able to do that work through a lot of different functions. I'm a licensed attorney in North Dakota and Minnesota. I have spent a lot of time in human resources, as well as operations. I've been an auditor. I've had a really diverse career working in across a lot of different industries with companies as they grow and scale. And so, but, you know, in tying that all in a bow, I really do just consider myself a business process improvement expert. And early on in my career, I think I felt that there were really 2 levers in business, operations and finance. And it wasn't until I was asked to lead an HR function in a company that was growing really, really quickly, because my background was in business process improvement, and it was the department's processes that were struggling to support the growth of the company. In that role, I learned that there's actually 3 levers to business: finance, operations, and people. And that it's actually that third lever, the third leg of the stool that I think is the most important. So it's been an adventure of a career, and I just feel really fortunate to have had the opportunities that I've had.
Michelle, a lot of individuals with the type of background that you have and the profession in terms of the legal profession that is also your background, one of the last things they ever think about is some form of public service role because, and I can say this from unique experiences, sometimes, especially in the environment we're in today, you have more enemies than you have friends and you have people that could just go after you, right? But you made a decision to leave the private sector to serve not just the government, but the entire state of North Dakota. What prompted you to say, I'm going to do that?
Well, Mike, a number of things, really. I'll go back and say that I've had an adventuresome career because I was willing to do things that scared me and to say yes to invitations that were frightening and yet at the same time I knew presented opportunities. And this was another one of those types of decisions where I was very inspired by Governor Burgum's run for office as a private sector business person. And I knew that his interest in serving the state of North Dakota was, you know, was to make North Dakota a better place. And I suppose that's every governor's ambition. But I really liked the way he thought about it. And given the background that I've just shared with you, you know, I thought that I might have something to contribute to helping the North Dakota government serve our citizens better. And, you know, I think that there were a lot of things I was naive about. I was not involved in politics at all prior to saying yes to that invitation. I would have even classified myself as probably irresponsibly uninvolved in politics and really understanding the system and how it works and involving myself, you know, and I think I'm not too dissimilar from a lot of, you know, very busy professionals in that way. But it was an invitation that, you know, my family and I decided was good for the state. It was a sacrifice for us, but I do, you know, on the backside of those 4 years, feel really honored and blessed to have had the opportunity.
Yeah. I like the way you put that, irresponsibly uninvolved, but, you know, frankly, if it isn't something that is central to someone's interest or core, we're all kind of like that, right? So I appreciate what you did. There were a couple of things that happened during your service to all of us that were, to this day, really irritating for me, I'm sure for you as well. But I want to start talking about something that so few people really know. When COVID hit, and you were the commerce director, were you still wearing both hats at the time, by the way?
I was not.
Okay, nope, just commerce
just
director.
Just a few months past okay. Wearing both hats, yeah.
I shouldn't say just commerce director because it's a big deal. So COVID hits, everything is shut down. You turned your department, and I know you're going to give so many other people credit, and I understand it's a team thing. But Michelle, you turned the Department of Commerce on a dime to stop doing what it is trained and equipped to do something completely new. And that was to carry out the responsibilities of providing benefits, desperately needed benefits to so many. And I was privileged to watch this live. Could you, through memory, walk us through what that was like, how you worked with your team, and then from your assessment, I'll probably add to it, how it served so many so well as we came out of COVID?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the memories are still really close and really profound, as these types of things are. And I still remember the date. It was March 12th was the day that we had our first case here in North Dakota. And within 24 hours, the first thing we did at the Department of Commerce was get people home and get people safe and situated. And so, as you pointed out, I mean, within 24 hours from one night to the next morning, which is less than 24 hours, we got ourselves situated because we knew we were going to have a really important role in what came next. And I'll tell you, Mike, it was the first time in my life that I've had to do work where there was no body of knowledge or prior experience to rely upon. You know, as an attorney, we always look to case law. In other states, if we have to, there's always something. And there was no situation of first impression for us to rely on. And I knew that that was one, scary, but also two, an opportunity, because one of the things that I knew that we do really, really well in North Dakota is we have an ability to move quickly. And I know that some people might say government and speed are don't belong in the same sentence, but anyone who had any knowledge of what was happening on the inside would you know, disagree with that statement. And so the first thing was trying to understand the CARES Act, because we knew there was going to be money available. And first of all, you know, we said to our team at Commerce, about 55 people, we're going to be doing different jobs tomorrow. And so I met with most of the team as a team or individually or with their managers to say, what are his strengths? What are her strengths? What's she good at? Even on the side in a hobby. And we quickly learned that we had a group of people that were going to be really talented researchers. We learned that we had a group of people that would, and we knew this, really good communicators. You know, we had a marketing department. Previously, you know, we are marketing our state, but now we needed to market something different. So we repositioned all our resources kind of on a strengths-based approach. And I'll just take a little bit of a side note and tell you that as an HR person, the most effective organizations in the world position their team members to work in their areas of strength. And so it was an opportunity just from a human development perspective for me to see what really happens when you apply that research that says that's how things work well. And so we, you know, redefined mission very quickly. We said, you know, here's what you're going to do here, here, and here. Our research team got to work on understanding the CARES Act. I was part of that team. My husband is an accountant and a banker, and so this work was important to him as well. And we kind of joke around and say we might have been the only couple in the whole country that spent 72 hours locked in this room reading the CARES Act, because we knew that as quickly as we could understand it and deploy that information to the state, that it was going to be first come, first serve money, and we would win for North Dakota. And so we had people tracking it, tracking the changes in Congress, trying to translate it into communication before it was even signed. It was signed on March 24th. We were the first state in the country to offer an educational opportunity to our North Dakotans, to business people across North Dakota, to help them understand what was coming. And we did that even before the CARES Act was final. And then we went on to hold regular conference calls. You know, there was a conference call where I believe we had some 5,000 people on a Teams live call. And that just gives me goosebumps to think about, because if you knew what was happening in the background, you wouldn't have known it as a participant on that call. But we didn't even know how to run a Teams live before we launched into, can we do it for 5,000 people? And so, you know, there were people on the team that were previously working in economic development that now found themselves in a headset like yours running Teams live as a technician, because they had a gift for it and the courage to say, I can figure this out. And so, you know, it was just, let's move fast. Let's all, you know, chip in. It was the most remarkable display of selflessness and teamwork that I've seen in my life. And I've been working with teams, my whole life. And I just couldn't be prouder of the team at the Department of Commerce because their work was absolutely remarkable.
Michelle, I want to thank you for what you and your team did. I was very privileged to be able to participate as an observer on most of those calls, and especially the first one. I remember the first one, there was a slight delay in when it was supposed to start, understandably so. First of all, there's a lot of players that had to have a role, from the governor. I think even Senator Hovind was on that one possibly, but I mean, it was very well done. To your point, I don't think anybody had a clue about what was going on behind the scenes. I know you're going to give a lot of credit to others, rightfully so, but I halfway suspect, because I saw this might be on your LinkedIn account or maybe on High Road Partners, maybe. You're a process geek, and we all benefited from it. And I didn't know about the 72-hour lockdown with your husband to go through the CARES Act. Let me ask you this question. How many people in other states caught on to what was happening in North Dakota?
Boy, Mike, I wish I knew that. I really do. I have heard, in retrospect, that a lot of other states were coming out to our website. And one of the things I'm really proud of for us as North Dakotans is that as we were trying to figure out how to minimize the impact of business, we did something really important, and it was involve the businesses in the conversation. And the business owners from all different sectors formed small work groups and teams, and they created the smart restart protocols with the Department of Commerce and, of course, the Department of Health. And I know now in retrospect, we created some really incredible protocol. It didn't exist anywhere else. And there are other states that where we'd go to their websites and say, wow, that looks vaguely familiar. So, but I wish I knew the answer to that question. I would imagine that the answer is a lot because we moved fast. And, I guess if I were someone that was inclined to wait, we could have saved ourselves a lot of work. But I don't think any other state was able to do exactly what we did.
Well, I can share this with you. At the time, I had a corporate role for business development for a regional engineering firm. And so I have relationships with like talented people in many states. And as we would have calls or Zoom calls, obviously we weren't seeing anybody face to face back in those days. And I would share I got to tell you what's happening in our state. There was this look like, are you kidding me? And I think I wrote something that was probably never published about the incredible turnaround at the Department of Commerce, how efficient it was, and how virtually everyone in the state benefited. So from that, let me ask you this question. I have to tee it up this way. I was on a call earlier today with a person whose corporate umbrella has over 100,000 employees globally. I've had like conversations with, for example, a senior partner in a mega law firm. And the discussion of the day is the HR challenges with remote working. What kind of hybrid working should we really have? Can we force people back to work? And I could go on and on and on. My question is, as you formed High Road Partners, what kind of thought process did you go through saying to yourself, there could be a unique opportunity in HR and providing talent moving forward?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I think, Mike, I have a strong faith. And I do think that, you know, everything happens for a reason, even the things that I don't like. So I learned through my experience at the Department of Commerce that most of North Dakota's businesses are smaller, and that even though the minute you have one employee, you need HR, it doesn't make sense to hire an HR expert until you reach a much bigger size. And so what I was learning was that our business owners were being the HR person too. You know, you have to wear a lot of hats when you're a small business owner. But the bigger you get and the more complex HR gets, which the last year has taught us happens, you know, the more worried one gets about, am I doing this right? You know, and I always say, never confuse small with unsophisticated when it comes to business owners. We have some of the smartest, most brilliant, passionate business people here in North Dakota, and they're all perfectly capable of figuring out what they need to figure out. And so that's not the problem. It's do I have the time? Should I be figuring out the Families First Coronavirus Response Act today, or should I be doing something that's going to grow my business? And even if I do spend 4 hours on the internet and figure out what I need to do under that act, will I go to bed tonight with a little seed of doubt wondering if I got that right? And then when I have to concern myself with it again in 6 weeks because something came up, I will have forgotten it and I have to go through the whole thing again. So what we say we offer at High Road Partners is, in short, a sigh of relief, because we're a team of HR experts that a small business can work with for the fraction of the cost of one HR generalist. You get a whole team of experts in payroll and performance management and employee relations and compliance. And so when I work with business owners around the state today and I explain to them what they do, the most rewarding thing is their reaction, which is, why have we not met you sooner? because they all have this same experience. And so we're having a lot of really great reaction to the business model. And we have a team of people that are gratified through service to businesses. Their success is our success. And it's been a great time.
Let me kind of do a deep dive here for a second. And this would be specifically in the area of employee relations and compliance, something that you said, and the fact that you're a process geek. The conversations I've been having, and still do, even though I'm a retired guy, go something like this. The future has a certain element of unpredictability because what's happening in your own corporate culture, what is possibly happening at a federal level in terms of policies that could impact what you can or cannot do as a result of coming out of COVID. So just like the research that you were doing at Commerce with the talent that you had there to turn on a dime, are you doing something similar now? Because it just seems it's inevitable that there's still, the waters are really kind of murky and rough.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to keep our eye on that ball. And that's part of the value that we bring to our client, is so that they don't have to keep their eyes on that ball and wonder, you know, we have clients in Minnesota, for example, and they're, you know, regulations tend to change more quickly than in North Dakota, where our legislature meets every other year. And we've learned something in the process of onboarding clients who haven't previously had HR expertise. And that's that we need to expect that they really haven't kept up with some of those law changes and regulations. And again, what I tell my clients and my potential clients is, the only rule we really have is a no shame rule, no sheepishness. You do not have to feel shameful or sheepish when we have a conversation and you say, no, I really haven't kept up with that. Or no, we don't have this. Or we haven't looked at our employee handbook for years because I wouldn't have expected them to. They're busy with business, and we exist to come in and meet those needs. And in addition, you know, what we do at High Road is we invest in some of the tools that make sense for us to invest in. Like, you know, we have the best HR software in the world that we can now offer to our clients. It wouldn't make sense for our clients to buy the best HR software in the world. They should be buying new machining capabilities or investing in technology that promotes their firm's core business. But we subscribe to, you know, a number of publications that will keep us abreast of progress. And so we're kind of on the first to know list when there are changes made that are going to affect our clients.
You know, Michelle, with regards to what used to be the traditional work environment, you left your home, you went to wherever it was, you were there 8 to 5, typically whatever, and then you went home. COVID hit, and not that there wasn't already in place virtual employment opportunities, and more employers, out of necessity and wisdom, frankly, were offering more flexibility, because whenever you're competing for talent, when you get some talented people, you need to be flexible to keep them, right? But now, I would think that that's become even more complex for just a variety of reasons, COVID and otherwise. What are you kind of predicting, if this is a fair question, that the, you know, the Jetson family, what do you think that work environment will really be like as we move forward? Is it going to be almost exclusively some type of hybrid?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to use that word, is I do believe there'll be some type of hybrid. One of the questions that we're asking our clients now is, what are you doing to create a more flexible workplace? Because if your answer is nothing, you're going to lose. You're going to lose the talent battle. You're going to lose the people that are working for you. And, you know, by necessity and force, we learned a lot through the last 18 months. Some of it was really good. We learned what we were capable of in a very short amount of time. We learned that we were adaptive. We learned compassion and patience. And those were all wonderful things. We also learned, and I'm in this group of people that had this experience, that that hour of drive time, and for me, makeup and hair, and you know, is not time that needs to be spent. You can invest that time in work. We had to, when we were at, you know, going through this with the Department of Commerce, we were doing 18-hour days, 7 days a week. And that's not healthy in the long term, but it was necessary at the time. And it was, you know, kind of oddly astonishing to me how much time one can save when some of those ministerial things that were just a normal part of our day didn't have to be, along with the kind of the awareness or the realization that my team didn't care if I wore makeup on the Zoom call. We had business to do. And what we're hearing today, and it is affecting females more than men, because females are still today typically the primary person in charge of household activities, even though we're in the workforce. We're learning the value of being able to work from home, run upstairs, put a load of clothes in, and not having to stack all that stuff up late in the evenings or put something in the crock pot in the morning. And again, I'm not trying to be offensive to men or diminish, make a statement about equality in that way, but the studies are showing us that is the reality. And so having to leave that and go back to kind of the strict office construct, when we learned the strict office construct was not necessary, isn't going to be an option.
I'm glad you said that, because as we had discussed when I asked you if you'd consider coming on, the theme of this series that we're in leads up to Women's Equality Day. And so I'm very happy that you just said that. But I got to go back to something you said earlier. 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, that's over 120, it's 125 126 hours a week. How many weeks did you do that?
I would say for sure from March until June, And then after that, it really didn't lighten up significantly, but it did lighten up. But from March to June, it was all day, every day.
Oh, thank you. Oh, man. That's the average person who thinks 40 hours a week is a big deal. That's, you're doing that three times in a week, in a week,
yes.
Three times.
And Mike, it wasn't just me. I think that, you know, well, it was our entire department at Commerce, but that extended to the Department of Health, and it extended to the IT department at the state of North Dakota. And well beyond that, that is one thing that I wish more people knew, about how hard the people that work in state government worked to move us through that. And again, I mean, I'm sure it was everywhere. I'm sure that Human Services had much of that same experience, but it was a really remarkable effort. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, I've seen a lot of crazy things, but that was an enormous human accomplishment, teamwork, and I'll remember it forever.
Well, for the record, when it comes to makeup or hair, that's not a big deal for me. I just want you to know, it's just not a big deal.
Yours or mine?
Whoever's on the call, okay, with me, because I don't have hair and I don't wear any makeup. So okay, you're fine if, well, whatever you want to do with your hair or not, same thing with the makeup. I keep wanting to go back to this hybrid work environment. There will be fair amount of resistance in some businesses and corporations for a variety of reasons. One, they've just leased, and I know this from personal experience, just leased new space that had improvements and was based on, boy, in 4 years, we're going to have X number of additional employees in this space. And so it was based on growth and opportunity, and we're going to be able to attract talent, et cetera, et cetera. COVID hits. Now, instead of maybe 55 employees in that particular space, there might be one. Nowadays, there might be 3 to 5 because people still don't want to come in for a variety of reasons. Delta variant hits, it's even more in my better interest not to come in. So that presents a challenge financially for the company because they have this fixed input cost that it's just going into a hole. So I understand why they might want to say, we've got to figure out a way because this is just a waste of money. On the other hand, you have healthy people doing the work, whether they're in here or not. Mm-hmm. Is it something you're just going to have to say, you got to chalk that one up?
Absolutely, Mike. I don't waver on that at all. There's no gray for me there. You have to chalk it up and then ask yourself, do I want to lose more money by losing the people that I'm requiring to come back in here for no real reason other than I already paid for it?
Yeah. So you also then run the risk, if you're a heel digger, inner, use that.
Okay.
Use that in
your heel digger.
If you're
going
to dig your heel in, you'll also run the risk of losing the talent. They may be there, but they're thinking, I've got to go somewhere else. So they're not that productive anyway. They're not happy. So you have I don't want to call it a hostile work environment, but you have a work environment that certainly could be a lot healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, the period that we're in right now, I've heard it called the Great Resignation, capital T, capital R, that for about the past 4 months and possibly, you know, the next entire year. And this could change based on a number of factors, but I've heard it coined as the Great Resignation. And what that is predicted to be is exactly what it sounds like, a lot of people shifting choices. We know that women are leaving the workforce in droves. This is a setback that will take decades to recover from, because women are leaving the workforce in droves. People that were not satisfied with their employment previously had a lot of time to think about what comes next and what's important over these last 18 months, and are making job changes. There are retirements in record numbers for people that were pretty close anyway, but just decided, you know what, it's time. So we're seeing that today with our clients. We're seeing it with ourselves, frankly, and nobody is immune, but you can make it worse. And one of the ways to make it worse is to create what is transparently an arbitrary requirement that you need to come back in the office to get work done. We know we don't. We know we don't.
Yeah. When you say women are leaving in record numbers, is that because of work environment or other opportunities? What exactly, or is it a variety of things?
It is a variety of things, but one of those things is this isn't a criticism about equality or equity in a family, but during the last 18 months, we know from studies, research, surveys, that it was the female in a relationship, the mother, who largely guided their children in their online learning. And then, of course, they're torn in a couple different directions if they're also a working mother. Daycares were closed for a long time. You know, they're, and this is nationally speaking, we were really fortunate in North Dakota to not have that be as locked down or shut down for as long as other places. But, you know, we're reconsidering that family construct of, do we need to have two income earners? And whether we like it or not, it is still true that when that conversation is happening, it's most likely the female that is going to be the one that stays home and, you know, leaves the workforce to do that. And, you know, again, Mike, and this is not a bad thing. We're really fortunate to work in a time when, it is actually said to be a sign of kind of affluence when a family has a choice that only one person needs to work. But we also kind of saw that disproven over the last 18 months too, because people figured out how to make it work without a job that they got forced out of or that kind of thing. But again, it's typically the female that's affected by that and deciding to stay home because they can't do both roles in that intense of a way.
As you say that, and I'm thinking about the government, in this case, probably federal first, they're likely going to be, out of necessity and sometimes because government just does things it wants to do, likely going to be compliance issues that companies are going to be facing, they're not facing now. Because of all the things that you're just talking about in terms of equity and fairness, common sense, whatever it might be, what would be your, unless you charge for this, what would be your number one piece of advice for people that are in organizations that change is common and you might not be as adaptive as others are? What would be your number one piece of advice?
For the worker, for the employee?
No, the employer.
The employer. Oh, it is just that, you know, like I said, that's the conversation we're having with our clients right now. So we're thinking about it right now. What are you doing to create a flexible workplace? How are you rethinking your business model? We have to be having those conversations right now. You have to have an answer to that question, and you want to get out, you know, I would say it's probably too late to be in front of it, but you want to be having those conversations. You want to be showing your employees the good faith within which you're considering that question. You know, I work in an environment where we serve customers. We have client-facing interactions. We have clients that call. And it used to be true that you had to be in the office on the phone system to answer a phone, to transfer it to someone. And we've just deployed, I won't name the technology, but we don't have a phone system anymore. It's all through our computers. And so even our agents can work from home and we can transfer calls to one another from home. Not everybody has to be there to serve the walk-in customer. You might get a day in the office. So we're contemplating all those things right now and just rethinking this idea that even though we serve customers and clients, that we can do that in a different way.
I'll tell you why I'm laughing in a second, but my wife is very, very fortunate. She works for a firm that has been around quite a while and asked for flexibility in terms of the work environment. So her hours have been negotiated in terms of day parts. And then Friday, and we happen, so listeners and followers of Mike Seminary and Friends know, this is a Friday where Michelle and I are doing this. And that's also the day Deb works from home. And by the way, sometimes there are challenges with that because earlier in our conversation, for whatever reason, our Wi-Fi went down. This is the first time it's happened in all the podcasts that I've done. So it really impacted two people. It impacted Deb and me. Well, three. And Michelle.
Sure.
Before I go back to what I was going to talk about, when you look back on your HR experiences, you keep trying to leave it, but it follows you. What are some of the most valuable lessons that you learned when you were in those roles before you went into the public sector and then now started your own company?
You know, it all comes back to the same point, which is it's the people. It's always the people. But a couple examples would be earlier in my career, I worked for an organization that grew from 21 locations to 258, started in three states, went to 12 through acquisitions. And I worked on the acquisition team. And our job was to make sure the systems could fit together, you know, the conversions and the data migrations and the processes, and let's get everyone on the same process page. And we did this all very, very quickly over, you know, a short period of time, grew really fast. And what we came to learn was, yeah, the systems have to work, but if we're not doing a good job at cultural integration, this isn't going to work. You know, we're bringing on different locations of teams that were part of different organizations in different states and not paying any attention at all to what does it mean to work for this organization now. And this is something, you know, that's been written about to a great extent at, you know, with some of the larger, you know, computer companies and so forth. But we shifted our focus and kind of subordinated the system integration and put the people integration first. And it made a world of difference. And you could measure it. It was measured in turnover. It was measured in profitability, you know, time to be profitable after the acquisition. And so, you know, I make a number of lessons like that where it's been proven by my own experience, not just what I read, because research confirms this all too, but you have to focus on your people first. And from that, everything else will flow.
What I was chuckling about earlier, I retired from 17 years working in the civil engineering industry, and we were talking about phone systems and not having a phone system. It's all computer driven. That was one of the last things that was happening before I retired. You know, most people don't like change unless they're the ones leading it, right? And it's really uncomfortable in a civil engineering profession because of the way engineers think. And that's the way we want them to think, by the way. And so change for engineers sometimes can be very, very challenging. And I remember one particular firm I was very familiar with, they wanted to incorporate client relationship management software so they could do a better job of tracking activity, which leads to productivity, which leads to profitability. And some people get offended because, well, now you want to micromanage me. And in some firms, that could happen. I get it. But I'll never forget one person saying, the last thing I'm going to let you do is add another click to my life. Because it was just at the time where the internet was really becoming this vibrant, wonderful tool. And all of a sudden, the world was your oyster. There's so many things you could do, right? But this person wasn't going to let somebody add a click to their life. And consequently, CRM was not added to that firm for about another 8 to 10 years. That's why one of the reasons I was chuckling. Michelle, let me ask you this question. And if it is offensive, I don't mean it to be. How has the work environment been for you during your career from your perspective as a woman?
That's a great question. You know, I've had a lot of time to reflect on that intentionally. I've made time to reflect on that. And I can tell you that until I came to work for the state of North Dakota, it very rarely occurred to me that I was a woman. It wasn't something that I thought about because I have worked for a number of companies that gave me great opportunities. And don't get me wrong, I work my ass off. I've always worked my ass off. My dad said, you know, when you walk into a room and you're not the smartest person there, you're in the right room because you're surrounded by the people you want to be surrounded by. So even if you're not the smartest person in the room, you can always outwork everyone in the room. And that's kind of the approach that I've taken. And so, you know, along with that, you know, I have been afforded really wonderful career growth opportunities. And did I notice when I was working in manufacturing that I was often the only woman in the room? Yeah, I noticed that, but I didn't feel, I had not felt constrained or restrained at all because I'm a woman. Now, when I came to work for the state of North Dakota, of course, my first role was labor commissioner. And in that role, you do see, because it's the mission of the department to see issues of discrimination and so forth. And of course, that reinforced my good luck in my career because it's not that way everywhere. In state government, I think it's fair to say an absence of female leadership across the state. And that includes our legislature. And for other reasons, it was really the first time in my career that I thought a lot about what it was like to be a female leader. And, you know, in addition to that, I'll tell you that I have three daughters, as you said earlier. One of my daughters works at a bar and grill. And she has experienced some behavior that, you know, that really, frankly, just made me cry because I thought that things had changed more in the 30 years since I had a job like that than they really have. So, you know, we've come a long way. We have a long way to go. And it's just, I think, so ironic that these last 18 months we've learned so much about these last 18 months, but I think the net effect on women in the workplace is going to be negative, and that saddens me too.
Thank you for taking my question and then reminding us you've always worked your ass off, and I saw that firsthand, by the way. I'm going to ask you this question based on, and I'm going to say the way you said it, on your adventuresome career. If you had a magic wand, you could wave over the heads of young women and probably juniors and seniors in high school as they're starting to think about educational opportunities in front of them, which leads to career opportunities and potential in front of them. What's the one thing you'd really want them to know?
You know, you would have no way of knowing this, but you just asked me a really hard question. It gives me an opportunity to be really honest about what I just said about working hard, which is that that was my choice. Those were my choices. And it came with a lot of sacrifice. And what I see young people, not just young women, but young men too, doing differently is valuing things differently. My generation, Gen X, smallest generation, is known for its hard work. We like things. We like, we worked hard to earn money, to have things. And that was, kind of how we define success. And I'm seeing young people, probably really rightly so, look at us and how hard we've worked and some of the sacrifices we've made in terms of time and time away from family, and say, that's not what I want for me. And so, for our young people today, I think that's really good and really healthy. I think, of course, they need to know that, and I tell my kids this, that, I admire those choices. Just be aware that, your standard of living may need to change. And to my surprise, they're not troubled by that either. So there seems to be a little bit of simplification that I think could be really healthy. That will change the workplace too. So we Gen X boomers have to learn how to figure that out too. But to go back to your question, I really did want to kind of clarify, because I do have people ask me, young women, mid-career women, they say, your career is awesome. How would you do all that? And I want to be really honest with them and say, there were 2 years of my life that I don't remember. And my kids were 2 and 3. And I don't have any memories from those years because I slept 4 hours a night. And I don't get those years back. And would I do it differently? I don't know if I would or not, but I want people to know that. And to your question there, I want our young people to know that there's a ton of opportunity, especially right now here in North Dakota. And another boss of mine said, you don't have to do a lot to be a lot different, to differentiate yourself. And, whether that's coming to work friendly and positive every day or doing just a little bit above and beyond. And I've seen firsthand, with my 3 girls, how hard it is at the age you just cited, juniors and seniors in high school, to even know where to look next. And so the advice I would give on that is, it is a little cliche and it doesn't always land well, but you have to imagine yourself doing something that is consistent with your strengths. Hard part is figuring out what they are. So that's the work you got to do right now. But figure that out and then try it. Try it. Try it. Say yes. It's brilliant if you find something you hate. You have just done good job to you. You've found something you hate. You know you don't want to do that for the rest of your life. And finally, I just said for the rest of your life, the next piece of advice is know that whatever your choice is next, there's a very low likelihood you'll be doing it for the rest of your life. So I think I count about 5 career changes, like career changes in my own 30 years. And it's hard when you're that age to think that way. But
the process geek person you are you also somebody that on a pretty regular basis takes kind of your own self-inventory or assessment where here are my strengths and I can take some of those and get even better at those. And here's where they're not necessarily my strengths. They might be, and there might be little I can do about them. So I'm better off not trying to do anything with them and keep working on the strengths. Are you one of those kind of people?
Oh, Mike, all the time, all the time. I mean, there's such power in awareness. And it's served me well to be aware of what my strengths are and what my weaknesses are. We don't always get the luxury to just play to our strengths. But to your point, when I have to do something that, you know, makes me feel weak, I have to set aside extra time and I have to focus harder. And just being aware of those things is just a huge difference maker and, you know, helps you determine where you want to spend your time and where you need other people to, you know, step in. And it's freeing to know where your strengths are and where your weaknesses are. And, you know, I'm at the age now where, I can say, you know, I know exactly what those things are. And I can most of the time be pretty conscious of where I'm at and why this is feeling this way or why that's feeling that way. And it's freeing.
Another magic wand question. Now you're waving that same wand over the heads of business leaders that are dealing with, you don't have to answer this where it jeopardizes your opportunity to get a client, by the way, but they're dealing with these HR issues of 2021 and beyond, and they're going to be around for a while. What's the one thing you want them to know, or what's the one message you'd like to share with them?
You know, it's kind of what I said earlier, Mike. It's, you know, you have to think about the person, and if we can get to people first thinking about business decisions, engaging people in the process, caring about the person, most things will turn out all right. And, you know, the Gallup organization has studied employee engagement for, I suppose, going on, I don't know, probably more than 60 years, but I could be a decade off either way. And we know, based on research, that there are 12 things that motivate people. And, what I love about the body of work by Gallup is that they have quantified the importance of employee engagement. So I always say, if you sit me down with a CEO, I can convince any CEO why to care about employee engagement. It doesn't matter if he or she only cares about numbers and profit. I can convince he or she why he or she needs to care about employee engagement. Or if he or she just wants to give everybody a hug and create a great place where people want to come, I can convince he or she why employee engagement matters. And I think that would be the magic wand. I think, you know, I've been in HR for so long. I'm aware of the perception that HR can kind of be either fluffy or personnel department-y. So parties and paychecks. And I always say, we don't run a parties and paychecks HR organization here. This is part, an essential part of your business, just like your finance department. And so, Mike, it's all about employee engagement.
Well, speaking of employee engagement, don't you have like one of the most popular Dairy Queens about four blocks from your office? You ought to take your employees there one of these days this week and say, this is on Mike.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. But I'll tell you something funny. So we're also about a block or two from the M&H gas station. And Mike, we eat there a couple times a week. They have some soup every day, different kind of soup. Fantastic. I never thought, but yeah, it's a really important team building event.
What's the best way for people to learn more about High Road Partners and the services you provide and you? What website?
You bet we do. It's highroadpartners.com.
You want to give out your phone number? Not your personal, but High Road Partners phone number?
You know what? I would give out my email very happily.
Go for it.
Because I am the business development team member on our team. That's me. And I love it. I love it. I never found myself in what I would call kind of a sales role. I never fancied myself a salesperson, and I still don't, but it goes back to the strengths thing and believing in the service that you provide, which I do. And I have loved client development. Those are some of the favorite work that I get to do today. And I don't know that I would have expected that because I kind of consider myself a backroom person. But anyway, my email is mkommer at highroadpartners.com.
I've had just the wonderful pleasure of visiting with Michelle Comer from High Road Partners today. And I want to close it this way with, again, a huge thank you. I got to witness firsthand, up close and personal, what you and your team did. And I also know other departments in the state had a lot of heavy lifting as well. But I got to observe you personally. And what happened during COVID when you took your team, turned them on a dime, and then you shared more today, locking up with your husband for 72 hours to read the CARES Act, which was ever-changing. What you did for North Dakota was absolutely stunning. It was like a miracle. I was absolutely in awe, Michelle. And so I want for everybody in North Dakota to say thank you so much. You made it, I don't want to say easy, because it was challenging, but you made it a far more pleasant experience for all of us because of what you and your team did. Well, thanks for joining me, Michelle. I'm just a hoot. Maybe one of these days when I'm over there, you can take me.
I'm on it. Say a word.
Great day. Thanks, Michelle.
Bye. Take care.
Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network? Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.